This interview with Nancy Beard was conducted on January 27, 2023, in New Paltz, New York, in a group setting. Other voices on this recording are Fran Dunwell, Kara Lee, and Betsy Blair. The interviewer is Elizabeth LoJudas.
My name is Nancy Beard, and my maiden name is Warren, so I was born Nancy Jane Warren, and I grew up in Troy, New York, lived there. You know, we didn't move or anything, lived in Troy. And I am the youngest of four children. So I have an older brother, two sisters, and myself. And there's a 12-year span between the four of us. I lived in a house that my grandparents had built in probably 1920. And then my mother, as the youngest in her family, ended up being the one who ended up taking care of my maternal grandmother and living there. And I went to public school for the first 8 years in the Troy public school system. And then I was lucky enough to go to a private girls' prep school, which was about a mile away from our home, which was Emma Willard. So most of it was... it's a boarding school. Most of the girls there were from all over the country and the world, and but I was a day student, and I'd say I don't know. I mean, it was an urban environment that I grew up in, but I spent a lot of time outside. And especially with our dogs of whatever dog we had at the time. And, down the back hill from our house was a big lot of land that when I was very, very young, it was a private sanitarium. It was called Marshall's Sanitarium. And the building was still there, and it still had institutionalized, mental patients in it, and but then it was closed down at one point. But I used to just spend time going down there, and this old abandoned building. There were a couple occasions my sister and our friends broke into this place and rummaged around. But just the big open field kind of feel down there was a place I would go and hang out with the dogs, and just explore the woods that were around. And the other part of growing up, my family had a summer home on an island on Lake George in the Adirondacks. So the day after school was out, we'd pack up the car with the dogs and the cats, and we would migrate up to the Adirondacks and live on this island until the day before school started. And there were 8 houses on the island, so my cousins were 4 houses down. So I had this great connection with my cousins and my second cousins. And summers were just full of water and swimming. And you can get a boat license when you're 10 years old. So by the age of 10, I was driving a boat and had, just sort of free roam of the lake. And we water skied, and it was just, and living on an island, you live outdoors, you live in the environment, you learn to live with the wind, you learn to live to read the weather, read the waves, know if storms are coming, and you just learn to live in this outdoor, open environment. One of the things I really loved to do when I was young was collect crayfish. And at our house was at the point end of the island, so there were these very small sort of shallow protected rocky areas, and I got really good at catching, picking up these rocks really carefully and catching these crayfish, and I would stick them in buckets, and I would raise them all summer in these buckets and then have to release them at the end. And I'm not convinced, but I think I might have kind of decimated the population of the native crayfish in these little ponds when I was young. But I just found that fascinating, to take care of these critters and change the water and change the moss and watch them grow. Um, You know, I did some fishing. My father was a big hunter, a big fisherman, so that was part of sort of the environment around the family. And so that was exciting when I was young, but I think I kind of grew out of that as time went on. But just being on that island and just living outdoors like that had a big influence on me. In high school, at Emma Willard, I think where I really became aware of the environmental movement that was starting to evolve at the time. So this is the late 60s, early 70s. And in particular, I had a chemistry teacher, I think either my junior or senior year at Emma, who was involved in the preservation of the pine bush on the west side of Albany. And that's the first time I really became aware that you could try to make a difference and try to change the trajectory of things like development. My family was very conservative, and I remember sort of, you know, kind of waking up to the environmental movement, and I'd be at the dining room table and I'd say, you know, we've got to stop this water pollution, we've got to stop this air pollution. And my mother and my brother would say, you can't do that. You can't tell, you know, you can't tell industry what to do. You can't tell the government. You can't do that. And so I did grow up in this environment of sort of not rocking the boat and just this attitude of you can't do that. And I've spent my whole life kind of fighting that. But this chemistry teacher was really kind of opened my eyes to what the possibilities were to try to protect the environment. And now you go back and you look at the pine bush, yes, there's a small, very small preserve of what the pine bush used to be, and all that development happened anyway. There's a landfill and all the highways and the big shopping malls all sitting on top of this precious aquifer. But that I remember was a real an eye-opener, so I thank her for that. What else? I know there were lots more things I was going to say that now have escaped my mind. But I'll move on from Emma Willard. I was not very inventive in thinking about what colleges to go to. It was just assumed that you'd go to college. And I was not the most stellar student at Emma. There were a lot of very, very bright young women there who all got, you know, straight 800s on their SATs, and I certainly was not in the I was not in the top quarter or half of the kids there, but I sort of applied to all the other colleges that all these other kids applied to, and I clearly didn't have a ghost of a chance to get into most of these colleges, where it was turned out when you go to a school like that, they might take one student. You know, Colgate University might take one student out of a prep school like Emma Willard. Well, it certainly wasn't me. So I applied to all these colleges I did not get into, but Skidmore College was my safety, and it's where my sister went. And so I got in there, so that's where I ended up going to college to start. And I was also not a particularly stellar student when I was there, in the beginning anyway, but I had this moment. And, you know, I did basic science. I was still interested in science and math, so I was kind of focused in that direction. But I remember somewhere in the middle of my sophomore year, I just woke up one morning and I said, I need to get serious about this. You know, if I want to really do science and math, I need to get serious about this. And I straightened up and I sort of discontinued the partying life that I and so many people were living at the time. And I did get serious about it, and I decided that Skidmore was maybe not the best place for me to continue my education, and so I applied to Cornell University, which is where my family has a long legacy at Cornell, and I had no idea whether I could get in or not, but I applied, and lo and behold, I did get in. And even there, you know, I remember reading my essay to my mother, and she said, oh, a second grader could do better than that. Why are you going to even bother Don't even bother applying. So I said, well, it comes from the heart. And so I applied and I got in. And I went for the interview, and the fellow who interviewed me said, you know, we don't take many students like you with a GPA like yours, he said. But there was someone on the review board who really liked your essay. So when you get into a place like Cornell, I just felt like, how could I not take this opportunity? You know, it's given to me. How could I not do it? So I went to Cornell for my second 2 years. And I never worked so hard in my life as to stay alive there. I finally figured out kind of how to do it. But the education there was just tremendous, the professors there. And I had some opportunities to spend part of a summer out on the Isle of Shoals for a marine biology course. And I just absolutely loved that. And I spent half a summer doing that, and then the other half working for one of my professors, Dr. Dwight Webster, working in the western part of the Adirondacks on a private reserve there called the Adirondack League Club. And Dr. Webster hired me to work with one of his graduate students who had been like an English major or something like that, but she was getting a master's degree in fisheries biology, but she didn't have a biology background, so he hired me to help her because I'd been studying fisheries biology and I had sort of a science background. So she got the master's degree and I helped her along. But it was a great summer. It was a great opportunity. And I think that summer kind of showed for me this kind of love I had for both freshwater aquatic ecosystems and marine science and marine biology. And so then I started to feel kind of torn between the two, because I grew up as a freshwater person, but my eyes were being opened to the world of marine science when I was at Cornell. And I look back at that now, ending up working on the estuary where the two are blended together. It just couldn't be more perfect that way. I don't know. Maybe for me, I'm going to leave it at that. I don't know if you have any prompt questions going, or
indirect, maybe Yale Forestry connection as well, right? Through Carl.
Yes. So, I ended up coming to the Hudson Valley, this part of the Hudson Valley anyway, to be with the person who is now my husband, who was working at the Mohonk Preserve. And partway through a few years into our marriage, he ended up going to the Yale School of Forestry and Management. He actually did he did that in the management school, so he did a 3-year program as well.
And you met Carl and Cornell?
I met Carl at Cornell, yep. And it took a few years to put it together, but...
I vaguely recall seeing you at the forestry school.
Me too.
So we must have overlapped in time at some point. I was there from 82 to 84.
I remember walking into the Marsh Science Building, and you were sitting on a bench because Carl was involved in an interview to come to the forestry school.
Maybe that was it.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I don't remember that.
It was before he came.
That might have been the weekend that the car broke down, yeah. And I just wanted to go home. We went to New Haven, and it was hot. And we were thinking about actually moving from Ulster County, because I at the time I was working for the Ulster County Environmental Management Council. That was the first job I had when I moved to Ulster County. And so this was going to be a commuting life when he went to graduate school back and forth. And but we went to New Haven and took a look at it. And I remember looking at a trailer park that had this pink trailer in it and thinking, I guess I could do this. You know, I guess I could live in a pink trailer in a mobile home to send my husband to college. And somewhere along the line, the car broke down, and I just said, I want to go home. You know, I just want to go back to Ulster County. I want to go home. And we did not move to New Haven. We stayed in Ulster County. I kept my job at the Environmental Management Council, and we commuted for 3 years.
Mm. Yep. How did you get your job at the EMC?
Well, when I came to Ulster County and I was jobless, prior to that I had been working for the Adirondack Park Agency as a what they called a CETA employee. It was like a what we have now is like the SEA internship. So I had a 18-month internship at the Adirondack Park Agency. And I was a cartographer. I was making maps for them. And so when I came, I moved down to Ulster County to be with Carl and to get married in 1980. So in job hunting, I finally landed a job with the Ulster County Real Property Tax Office. And I think that's probably because I had this cartography background from working for the park agency. And so I worked for the Ulster County Tax Map Office for 2 years. And while I was there, it turned out that the person who had been working at the EMC part-time, who was Sarah Johnston, was moving on, I believe, to Clearwater. And so the EMC position not only opened up, but the county decided to make it a full-time position, full-time civil service position. And so I interviewed for that and was hired. And so I had to go, start the whole civil service kind of process. But I worked for the Ulster County EMC for 6 years. And it was through sometime in there that I met you, Fran. Now, I met you, I think, before that. I met you through Sarah Johnston. We came here, and we stuffed envelopes for Maurice Hinchy's, some Maurice Hinchy campaign. Mm-hmm. And that must have been shortly after I had moved here. So that was
1980?
Something around 1980. Yeah, I think that's when I first met you.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. But then certainly when I was at the Ulster County EMC, you and I somehow crossed paths again, and you invited me to be a member of the Hudson River Fisheries Advisory Committee, and so you put me on the committee first, and I think I might have been the only woman on that committee with all these old fishermen and Bobby Kennedy Jr.
Everett Knack, John Mylod, Smitty.
Bobby Gabriels. Oh, yes.
And Everett Knack.
And yeah. Then C. Levette Smith was the chairman. And he was just wonderful. Yeah. He welcomed me. He made me feel comfortable in a very uncomfortable situation.
Do you remember that you and I went up against
Northeast Solite?
Northeast Solite, which was burning toxic wastes.
Well, they wanted to.
They wanted to burn toxic
They wanted to burn toxic wastes.
And do you remember the administrative law judge calling us up to the bench?
Uh-huh.
Because everybody else had a lawyer representing them, and we didn't. And he said, "You'll be fine. Say what you need to say."
Oh,
do you remember that?
Vaguely.
Vaguely?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
So
yeah.
That was part of your job at what did you do for Ulster?
For the EMC? Ulster EMC, I was the environmental resource technician. So, I was a one person staff office. And so I did I ran the EMC for the Environmental Council. So it was meetings, and I would go and represent the council at these public hearings and do the daily in and out business of the committee.
So were you giving testimony on Northeast Solite as an EMC staffer, or is that more personal?
Well, it was on behalf of the EMC. I think I was presenting. I think the chairman of the EMC was there also. David Strauss was the chairman at the time. So I was either, I can't remember quite, I was either presenting his written words, it could have been. Mm. Certainly someone with more credentials than myself. Mm. Yeah. But, yeah, we used to do things like that, attend administrative law hearings. Yeah. Yeah, and then from being on the Fisheries Advisory Committee and working in the EMC was just around the time when the Fisheries Advisory Committee became the Hudson River Estuary Management Advisory Committee when the law was changed, 1987. And I just happened to be, and so then Fran was putting that together, and you had some money to hire a staff person, and I just happened to be on the civil service list that...
For public participation specialist.
For public participation specialist, yep, and I was reachable, and so you hired me, and we worked together for 34 years.
A great decision.
A great decision. Yeah, really quite amazing. But I do find that the way the jobs kind of folded one into another, the way they, you know, working as a cartographer, fell into the tax map at the county, fell into the Environmental Management Council at the county, fell into the Fisheries Committee, fell mm-hmm. into the estuary program at DEC was a continuum that I didn't plan. I wasn't expecting it, but it all just fell into place
yeah.
somehow. Yeah.